Taste of Paris. We're talking about the Women's World Cup and women's soccer on the international stage. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And the U.S. women's national team is considered one of the most successful in history. Team USA has three World Cup titles, including from the first ever Women's World Cup held in 1991. That bit of history sets us up for what we're seeing on day six of World Cup action. We have our eye on that 24-year-old midfielder, Rose Lavelle. She's a former Badger, the most decorated player in UW soccer history, scored twice against Thailand yesterday. And our own Judith Sears-Poisson is taking it all in. She is executive producer of WPR's Central Time, joining us from Paris and enjoying the World Cup festivities. Judith, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Kate, I'm really happy to do it.
So what is it like in Paris right now? Set the mood for us.
Sure. Well, in the center of the city, I haven't actually seen much as far as obvious fans, I'd say, but it's a big city. It's during high tourism season, and the stadium, which is Parc des Princes, is pretty far to the west of the city, but it is being talked about a lot on, say, the morning TV shows, and not just what's going on in Paris, but in the other eight cities that are hosting games too. It's really from north to south, east to west in the country. At the opening match on Friday night, it was a really festive atmosphere. Lots of families with kids of all ages, lots of little ones even, and it felt like there were about an equal number of men and women there as fans. Not surprisingly, I'd say nearly everyone was there to support France. It was the opening match with the home team, but there was a noticeable block of South Korean fans too, and it was just a really positive, friendly environment. There was no booing. You know, there were clapping for good plays made on both sides. I will say security was very tight, given the fear that an event like this could be the object of a terrorist attack. I don't know if people remember, but the night of the Bataclan attacks in 2015, that actually started with suicide bombers at Stade de France, that's to the north of Paris, during a friendly soccer match between France and Germany. So pat downs of all of the 45,000 people that went in.
Yeah, so 45,000 people, the stands have been pretty full, would you say?
Certainly for the opening match, I think they said that, of course, the different stadiums have different capacities. I think Parc des Princes in Paris is probably one of the largest, but they've been averaging about 18,000 to 20,000 fans for every game. The one I was at on Monday night, which was Argentina-Japan, that was 25,000 people, which at 6 o'clock on a Monday, it was a holiday here, but still, I thought that was a really good turnout.
You talked to a lot of people about how they're feeling about the World Cup, and you asked some middle schoolers whether they think people are right who say that male athletes are stronger than female athletes, and here's what they had to say.
Non,
les filles sont plus fortes.
Mais aussi parce que le foot masculin, ça commençait avant.
Judith, tell us about your conversation there with these sixth graders. What did they have to say?
I was so lucky. I went to the Institute of the Arab World because they had an exhibit on the role of soccer in the Arab world, and this class of sixth graders were there. Both the boys and the girls said that they were really excited to support the women's team, even though they said they really don't know the individual players like they do the men's. They said that if it was easier to, for instance, see the games on TV, they would love to do it. They are all really hoping that the French women's team earns their first star on their jerseys by winning the cup, and they said they're sending all their good thoughts and all their strength to them.
You've had some other conversations, and you talked with a gardener. What was that like?
Yeah, so the Luxembourg Gardens are one of the biggest green spaces in Paris, and I was walking through, and there was a crew of gardeners there, and I just went up to them and asked if I could talk with them. Two of the three guys said they weren't really soccer fans, so the third one became the representative for the group. But he said that, you know, given the chance, he too would watch and enjoy women's soccer just as much as men's. It just hasn't been given the same exposure. He really kind of blamed, you know, marketing and media for that. And he said that to him, the players are equally strong and talented. And he really thinks that women deserve as much of a chance to make a living as a professional soccer player as the men's do. He thought that soccer, like in other parts of life, he said, would be better if it was feminized more, that women had equity and played an equal role.
And equity has been coming up in the World Cup. We also looking at treatment of female players. How aware are people you've talked with about these issues? And does it color it out how they're experiencing these games?
You know, some people, like the man I spoke to at Luxembourg Gardens, are definitely aware of the inequities. We talked a little bit. He was happy to hear that the U.S. women were suing, that there had been the other efforts to bring more equity in pay and in treatment. I don't know if it's really coloring how people are seeing the games. It's certainly been on my mind. And watching the game, for instance, on Monday night, I kept thinking, you know, that these players, whatever team wins the World Cup, they will receive as their prize money 7.5% of what the men last year won. I mean, not even 10%. And that it just shows such a lack of respect, I think, for the players and for the game.
Well, Judith, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. I'm back to vacation now, and I've got another match tomorrow night, and then back to Madison.
Judith Cyrus-Poisson is executive producer of WPR's Central Time, and she joined us from her travels in Paris. So we're carrying on with our look at Women's World Cup. FIFA just announced that it had reached an important milestone with over 1 million tickets allocated to fans worldwide. Let's bring in Roger Gonzalez. He's a writer for CBS Sports. Roger, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So we're on day six. What have you seen as the biggest moments so far? What have you been watching out of Women's World Cup?
Yeah, it's certainly what the U.S. women were able to accomplish yesterday. I mean, to win 13-0 on the most lopsided victory in World Cup history, both men or women, really a performance that you could see coming from a mile away, just because the U.S. played Thailand a few years ago, beat them 9-0. They just showed no mercy in a game that I don't think anyone who saw it will ever forget. And so the U.S. has stole the headlines early on with what they showed, and you know, it sets up for a really nice rest of the tournament.
Well, even when you saw Thailand come out and saw the Team USA come out, I mean, they even look quite different. It's not evenly matched at all.
No, it's not. It's like night and day. And this feels like, you know, having the, you know, a really professional team playing against an amateur team in a sense. It's just so different in regards to the development that these players have, how long they've been playing, the coaching that they receive, the skill that they just have naturally. It's a huge gap that you don't see that too much in the sport, especially on the men's side. It's something that we saw on the men's side years ago when there was huge disparity between the talent levels. But for the women's game with, you know, the different zones in the world, how teams get through qualification, it sets up for these games to be at times very lopsided. I think in 2007, Germany beat Argentina 11-0. And you think, well, Argentina, it's a, you know, a significant big country. And that's a team that really is very behind when it comes to developing the women's game. And they've made some progress, but it was nothing compared to what we saw in this one. I mean, the U.S. had 40 shots. They could have won by 20 goals. It makes you almost feel a little bit bad for the tie just because of how lopsided it was.
Yeah, Roger. So how does the structure of Women's World Cup work in terms of the tournament, and how is it different from the Men's World Cup?
All right. So in the Women's World Cup, there are 24 teams. So you have six different groups with four teams each. And usually in tournaments, you'd like to have the top two teams from each group move on, and then that's it. Then you play knockout rounds. But for this tournament, because there aren't eight groups, and that would only mean 12 teams going through, to get to 16 teams in the knockout stage, you also have four of the six third-place teams. So the four best third-place teams move on, and that sets up 16 teams, win or go home, all the way to the title. And that differentiates from the men's game, that right now there's 32 teams in the men's game and basically eight groups and the top two go through. So it's a little simpler just because of the numbers. The men's game is expanding to 48 teams for the 2026 World Cup, which will be in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And hopefully we can see the women's game at some point expand a bit too to get to a number that maybe works a little bit easier.
Talking with Roger Gonzalez, a writer for CBS Sports, we're looking at Women's World Cup and what we're seeing out of France. Roger, which teams should we be watching for right now? Who are the front runners at this point?
Yeah, it starts with the U.S. just because they are the reigning champs. And like you said, you know, with three World Cup trophies, only two countries have multiple. The U.S. leading the way with three. And then you look at Germany with two. Germany's I think you put them up there as one of the top three contenders to win based on that history. They have some injury issues, but they certainly have more than enough to win the competition. And then I'd also throw France in there as the host, though they have never won, but it's huge being at home and having that advantage. They've got really some fantastic players that I think any team in the world would love to have. They have a defender, Wendy Renard, who's 6'2", just a towering figure, who scored two goals in the first game as a defender. She's just so good in the air. And then England is the last team I'd really throw in there as a contender, a country that has improved quite a bit in the women's game and has really high aspirations this time around.
Well, Team USA fell to Sweden. What do we see out of Sweden?
Yeah, so Sweden's an interesting team. This
I
is
should
a team
say
that,
in the Olympics.
Yeah. Right, right. And that has created a little bit of a rivalry between the two. And you, know, you had former U.S. goalie Hope Solo call Sweden cowards after how they played in that game. It's created quite a bit of tension. And so when the draw came out that the U.S. would be playing Sweden, that was certainly a game everyone had their eyes on. And Sweden's one of those teams that has had a lot of success in this tournament before, similar to Norway and China in the sense that, you know, back in the day they were considered, a potential power, but have since not necessarily faded a bit. Maybe it's been the emergence of other countries, but they certainly haven't been at the level of, of a U.S. Or a Japan in recent years. But yeah, I mean, that's a game that everyone has their eyes on, U.S. Sweden in the last group stage game that should be with both of them tied on 6 points and the winner going through.
U.S. has some work to do there to resolve past history. Talking Women's World Cup underway in France with Roger Gonzalez, a writer for CBS Sports. Do you plan on traveling to France to see any of the matches? What's your favorite thing about soccer? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. Yes, we're talking World Cup Day 6 here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and Team USA has been waiting 4 years to defend its title. After winning the World Cup in 2015, team fell to Sweden as we were talking about the Olympics in 2016. So what is your favorite thing about soccer? Did you play soccer as a youth or now as an adult? What attracts you to the sport, and what are your thoughts on the U.S. women's team equal pay lawsuit? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Roger Gonzalez is our guide. He's a writer for CBS Sports, and he stays with us. Roger, gotta talk Rose Lavelle, 24-year-old midfielder out of UW-Madison. She is on fire. She two goals yesterday against Thailand. What do we know?
Yeah, she's a great player. I mean, she has so much potential, and I think will be one of the faces of this team entering the next World Cup when she's more in her prime, and some of these older players maybe shift away from the roles that they have. But she's ready now. I mean, she's such a complete player who plays well beyond her age. I think she's a difference maker, as we saw, someone who plays with a lot of confidence. And I think U.S. fans have a lot of reasons to be excited for what she brings to the table now and into the future.
There have been concerns, though, about injuries. I mean, she's had some setbacks there.
Yeah, she looked like she picked up a little knock after landing awkwardly in the game against Thailand, but fought on. And that's one of the characteristics that she shows, that she's tough. She tries not to come out of a game if she doesn't have to. Someone who obviously doesn't like to come out because of how much she wants to be on the field. And it's nice that the U.S. hasn't had to deal with some of the injury issues that other teams have had at this tournament. They seem healthy entering the next game, and that's obviously key. But yeah, Rose, as you alluded to, I mean, someone who I think really has the chance to be one of the very best players on this team, and the progression that she's made has been pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah, certainly missing her here at UW-Madison. So, a player from Norway, Ada Hegerberg, has made headlines for her decision not to play at the World Cup this year. And Hegerberg is widely considered the best female soccer player in the world. Why won't she make an appearance?
Yeah, it's been interesting. She has had a dispute with the federation, hasn't been very vocal about it, but she's been trying to fight for just having equality for the women's game in Norway. similar in a sense maybe to what we see in the US in regards to just, you know, trying to fight for what they feel is rightfully that they rightfully deserve. And so she's someone obviously with a huge platform, having, you know, been awarded the award as the world's best player. So for her to, you know, not play certainly makes quite the statement. She's there in France working. She's doing something TV related. And, you know, for someone who still has a lot of years ahead of her, to skip the World Cup has certainly made lots of headlines. And, you know, she's using it as a chance to stand up and fight for what she believes in. So it's certainly an admirable cause, and, you know, something that she has been, you know, hasn't been as vocal about. People would like to know a bit more details as to what specifically. But, you know, she's trying to fight for what she wants.
Well, gender equity has been coming up. The U.S. women's team sued the U.S. Soccer Federation this spring over equal pay. What do we know about this lawsuit?
Well, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, the latest chapter a few months ago comes right before the tournament, which, you know, I don't think is any coincidence. I think it makes perfect sense for them to bring it back into the spotlight ahead of this tournament, where they, you know, once again are trying to show exactly what they can do on the field and why they're deserving of more. And, you know, it's been an issue for quite a while, the difference in, you know, whether it's pay or, you know, what they receive when it comes to the type of hotels. So, you know, this is this is nothing that's going to end, I don't think, anytime soon. People thought maybe it'd be handled out of court. The U.S. Soccer Federation is standing firm and, you know, pursuing, you know, they're standing up legally in the courts to fight for, you know, what they think. And very complicated situation when you're, you know, suing your employer. And, you know, really, I think it boils down to, you know, what we've seen, you know, in this country overall, just trying to get to a point where there is equal pay between men and women. We saw Chuck Schumer tweet about it specifically in regards to women's soccer yesterday. So, you know, it's one of those things where I don't think it's going to be resolved anytime soon. The U.S. is doing, the players specifically are doing what they can to stand up for what they believe in. And hopefully in due time, we see some significant progress.
So why is the women's team so dominant on the world stage and seeing more success than the men's team? What's going on there?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. It doesn't necessarily boil down, I think, to one thing. I mean, I think first off, you have to note that, I mean, the U.S. women's national team have the most talent out of any team in the world. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, people wonder, why can't the men's team be like this? And I think there are a lot of differences. I mean, I think certainly while the U.S. women have, you know, the best team in history, the most successful team on the men's side, perhaps at the very, very top, you see more competition when it comes to these countries having, you know, played the game for so long. They're just kind of being more history there. But, I mean, you know, not to take away from the U.S. women at all, because what they've done is absolutely incredible. But I think, you know, when you look at the U.S. men's team, you have really a decent level of talent, nowhere in comparison. They haven't come close to sniffing even, you know, close to anything close to winning a World Cup like the women have. I think with the women's game, you've got all these players. I feel like every little girl, you know, grows up playing soccer now and looks up to this U.S. women's national team. On the boys' side, perhaps there's, you know, whether it's, you know, baseball or football or lacrosse or all these other sports, some people think maybe the best athletes are not playing soccer. But for the U.S., they've led it, you know, winning the first World Cup, winning three, going for four. They are the gold standard in women's soccer. And, you know, something that the men would like to at someday accomplish. It just doesn't seem like they're going to come close anytime soon.
Talking with Roger Gonzalez, he's a writer for CBS Sports. We're looking at Women's World Cup in France underway with the Team USA beating Thailand yesterday quite handily, 13-0. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you appreciate about soccer? Did you play soccer as a youth or now as an adult? And what attracts you to the sport? What are you watching for at a Women's World Cup? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Roger, going way back in time, the Women's World Cup was founded right around 30 years ago. First games were held in China in 1991. The Men's World Cup has been around since 1930. Can you tell us about how the Women's World Cup got started and why didn't this happen, you know, until the 90s?
Yeah, it's it's something that people have asked me, you know, quite a bit about. And I think we saw, you know, with the men's game and the popularity, and especially in this country, there were, you know, there was a time where I was only just a few years old when that World Cup happened. But I remember my dad, who played professionally, telling me, you know, growing up in this country when he immigrated from Central America, that he would go play in all these leagues with friends on the weekends, and he would see, you know, some days he'd see some girls kicking the ball around. Then later on, he'd see more and more, and he could see the growth of the game in this country specifically. Hmm. And, you know, when you look back at, you know, just international women's soccer, you know, in the 1970s, there were some kind of unofficial tournaments. There were some in Mexico, some in Denmark. So there was a bit of a progression there, an excitement for trying to get something going on the women's side. I mean, to think, as you said, 1930 and taking all the way to 1991 to get the Women's World Cup, certainly much longer than anyone really thought. But it was just kind of a slow process because there was not a lot of there wasn't much of a foundation there for the sport in a lot of these different countries. So it took a while to, you know, they're far from catching up to the resources that there is on the men's side of the game. But it just wasn't, you know, very popular in a lot of these countries. And I think that's been something we've seen, you know, like, for example, with the Thailand women's national team. The sport hasn't been huge there on the women's side for a sure. long time. And it's kind of evident by the resources that they have, the talent level that they have, that's going to take quite a while. But I think, you know, for the World Cup starting in 1991 and to see where the U.S. women's national team is right now, it's been an incredible amount of progression in such a short amount of time.
Roger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Roger Gonzalez is a writer for CBS Sports. We've been talking about Women's World Cup. And earlier, we talked with our own WPR staffer, Judith Sears-Poisson, who joined us from Paris, where she's taking in the festivities. Just ahead, we talked to a doctor about his new book, Love Thy Neighbor, A Muslim Doctor's Struggle for Home in Rural America. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.